Welcome to episode 140.
We are friends with fantasy benefits. Of fantasy benefits.
Mike, how hard are you right now?
I am just
Oh, man. I've been hard since you said hi. Welcome to Friends with Fantasy Benefits podcast.
Join me on this Justin's obsessed with the guys who just blast home and do jack shit out.
And I can't spell Kentana.
Come on.
We are friends.
Trying to figure out. Well, first of all,
see,
I thought
Chuck always said
Park was really
not
cool,
that bad. It's somewhat normal. Yankee
nice
Stadium
well.
Is the craziest park. No, fuck you, Chuck. Coors Field
was a very good
number one
team.
Crazy park.
All plotted by my
we
wife.
We are
so
friends.
Lucky on that part, aren't I?
Justin's
but other than that, I'm back
Justin's
and I'm reared and ready to go here.
Shit out. Fine.
That sounds like a
I just feel like forget Chicks dig the long ball. Justin dig the long ball.
I do dig the long ball. I think this is like my fourth podcast.
We are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Our new football podcast. Yeah. Right. How are you doing?
What are these vacations people talk about so often? I'm not familiar with those.
It's something you do to keep your mind fresh.
Well, I never had a fresh mind to begin with, so I'm really lost in all this right now.
Well, that is fair. Before we get started, just want to remind everybody that our sponsor is OfficialFantasyRings.com. You can go to OfficialFantasyRings.com, use our promo code FWFB. To get 10% off at checkout. They make customizable rings for your fantasy league. Go and get a ring. Make your opponents in your leagues kiss your ring after you destroy them using our advice. Go to officialfantasyrings.com. Use the promo code FWFB and get that ring that your opponents will dread forever. Let's jump right into our players we're going to discuss. One of the ones that Chuck wanted to talk about is Didi Gregorius, and I believe Eli is feeling pretty flabbergasted by the fact we've got to discuss this guy. Eli, what are your thoughts on Didi Gregorius?
I mean, I'm probably a little harsh on him. I just remember discussing him earlier in the year. He's just like the most uninspiring fantasy option, but you know, I guess he deserves some credit. He's hitting almost 300, and the BABIP's not out of control. He's cut his strikeout rate the last several years, so you know the average is fairly legitimate. And the what's surprising to me is the power, the 11 homers, the 44 RBIs. I don't see that sustaining at that kind of rate, but you know, you could do worse in the middle infield option than Didi Gregorius. I just think that with the fact that he doesn't walk ever and then he bats on the in the bottom of the order and not a very special lineup, that the power numbers and the runs scored and stuff are going to kind of go down the rest of the way, but he's okay.
Chuck, what are your thoughts on Gregorius moving forward?
Well, I think he's kind of an interesting guy just from sort of a crossroads situation, a crossroads at the position, because I remember shortstop would, you know, was pretty short on guys here in recent years, and now it looks like it's pretty deep, so people might actually be able to wait at shortstop moving forward. You know, I mean, he's only walked 12 times, so I get exactly what Eli's saying, you know, and this is his first double-digit home run year ever as a professional, you know, but his slugging percentage is up 100 points this year versus last year. And not only do I think it's a crossroads at the shortstop position as to what we're going to do going forward, but I think it's a really interesting time for the Yankees because, you know, they're going to have money coming off the books. Are they going to get below salary cap levels to save themselves money going forward? Are they going to reboot? You know, does Greg Bird help that lineup next year? Are they going to be a potent offensive team going forward? Because I think the counting numbers and such for Didi Gregorius, it's going to make a difference as to how valuable he is going forward.
Yeah, I've always kind of liked Didi Gregorius in terms of giving you what you're looking for on draft day. You don't have to invest very much in him. He's a perfect kind of AL-only a middle infield option. And he's having a fantastic year. I buy a lot of it. Maybe not the power so much. I don't know if he's going to, you know, hit another 7 or 8 home runs. Probably more in the 4 to 5 range. But he offers a good average as long as you don't have him in an OBP league because, like Eli and Chuck both alluded to, he doesn't walk very much. And he plays fantastic defense. So it's going to keep him in the lineup no matter what. You don't have to worry about a lot of your other AL-only middle infield options that lose playing time because they suck defensively. This guy's going to be in there every week. I think he... you know, I think he is getting you more than you asked for on draft day. So I don't know what you could really complain about with Didi Gregorius.
I definitely agree.
Let's go ahead and move on to the next guy we're going to talk about. That's Jeremy Hellickson. This is a guy we've talked about a number of occasions throughout the season. And I keep kind of waiting for him to fall off, and it hasn't quite happened. Another good outing here last week. Chuck, what are your thoughts on Jeremy Hellickson moving forward?
Well, he's a guy who was obviously a mess when he was in Arizona. The Arizona thing didn't work for him at all, which is a little surprising because the venue is really not that much better in Philadelphia. He's a guy who's always pitched better than his FIP, but his FIP is 4.17 right now. You know, he's never pitched 200 innings in the bigs. He's got 7.7 Ks per nine right now, which is up a little bit. So the important thing is combining those two stats. I mean, some guys can survive with lower K rates because they pitch a whole lot of innings, and Hellickson's not a guy who does that. I think the most interesting thing about him now is seeing where he's going to get traded to, because the buzz is all over the place. You know, and he has allowed 19 home runs, so the change of scenery almost has to help if he goes anywhere but Colorado. So he's a guy that, you know, I'm not going out of my way to get right now, but if I have him, I'm kind of I've got a raised eyebrow trying to figure out exactly where he's going to land and how much that could actually help him.
Eli, what are your thoughts on Hellickson moving forward?
I mean, like, kind of like Gregorius, he's not sexy, but he kind of has been getting the job done. Like Chuck said, a trade might be good for him. Maybe more likely to get wins, maybe less, gives up less homers. He's a guy that I used to like a lot when he was in Tampa Bay. He wasn't flashy, but he always seemed to outdo his FIP. His ERA would always be better, and that seems to be the case once again. So he limits his walks. I know he doesn't get a lot of strikeouts, but if you're limiting your walks and only giving up solo homers, you can get the job done. So I think he'll be okay the rest of the year. But, I mean, don't go out of your way to go get him. He's fine. He'll help stabilize your rotation a little bit by not blowing up too much.
Yeah, he's kind of a guy with a bad fastball. But the rest of his other pitches have been fairly decent. His curveball, his change, his cutter. And as long as he doesn't have to rely on his fastball, he's going to be okay most of the time. He's never going to be an elite pitcher. He's never going to be what we thought he would be in Tampa Bay. But I think, especially as an NL-only option, as a deeper mixed league option, I think he's adequate for most rosters. I don't want to say he's going to be a difference maker, but considering you probably, in a 15-team league, didn't have to draft him at the beginning of the season, I think that is a pretty good sign that you're getting good value from him. He's been spotting his pitches fairly well, like Chuck alluded to. It's not like Philadelphia is a much better place to hit than Arizona, considering the stadium size. So it's pretty surprising that the homers haven't killed him, because I believe he's got about a 15% home run to fly ball rate this year, as I'm looking it up. 15% exactly. So I think he's a guy that can continue this. I don't think it's necessarily going to always be good. There are going to be blow-up starts, but for the most part, I think at the end of the day, you'll look at the stat line and you'll be fairly happy with what you invested in on Jeremy Hellickson. Let's talk about Melvin Upton. He was traded over to from San Diego over to Toronto in exchange for the 17th best prospect in the Blue Jays system, which isn't a very good system to begin with, so it was pretty much a money dump. Eli, what are your thoughts on Melvin Upton in Toronto?
Well, this certainly is good for his value. There might be a little bit of adjustment going to the AL, but we're talking about a move from San Diego to Toronto. That's a great upgrade in ballpark. It's also obviously a big upgrade in the lineup. He may not be hitting in the exact spot in the order that he was before, but that's fine. The lineup around him will make up for him. I mean, he's on pace for 25 homers and 32 steals. I'm sure he won't get there, but anyone who's even capable of putting those kind of numbers together is a huge asset these days. And yeah, the average of 255 isn't great, but that's not as much of a batting average drain as it used to be these days. So I think he's a really well-rounded fantasy option right now, and I don't see him slowing down all that much the rest of the way.
Yeah, I just released my AL-only outfield tiers for July on Fangraphs, and I put him down in like the fourth or fifth tier, and I got a little bit of flack over that, considering that friend of the podcast, Alex Chamberlain, who does the NL side of those same tiers, had him as his like fourth overall player in the NL before the trade. And while I respect Alex, I think Alex is an extremely intelligent guy and much better at analyzing baseball than I am. I just don't trust Melvin Upton to stick with the adjustments he's made to his swing. There have been concrete, real adjustments that he's made to his swing, but we've seen this before where he's made adjustments to his swing, and then as soon as he gets in any sort of slump, he reverts back to the Melvin Upton of old. And so I'm just not trusting that the swing change is a long-term adjustment. I don't have a problem with people going out and picking him up, spending a good amount of Fabco, grab him if you're in an AL-only league, but I'm just not 100% believing this, but I do like everything that you said, the fact he's going to Toronto with a better park, a better lineup, in a better division. I just worry that the real Melvin Upton will show up at some point. Chuck, what are your thoughts on Melvin Upton in Toronto?
Well, I actually was not very happy to see him move. I own him in a league where I've been between first and third basically the whole year. I mean, there's a lot to like, but then you also look, he's got a 304 OBP, and he's got 106 strikeouts in 93 games. And I guess the part that I'm looking at is that while it's a much better lineup and a much better place to hit in, it's not a very good team to run for. You know, you don't steal a lot of bases when Josh Donaldson is up and Edwin Encarnacion is up. So I think his steals are really going to go down in Toronto. That's one thing I don't like about it. And the other thing I don't like about it is something Justin's not going to like. I just don't trust him I just don't trust him mentally. You know, he's had all this ability and he's gone through these incredibly long, prolonged slumps of being worthless. Like, he wasn't even playable for stretches of last year and the year before. And I just think when you mess with a guy's mind who has proven to be pretty fragile to begin with, I just think this could go one of two ways. I would have rather if he'd have stayed in San Diego.
I'm not going to beat you up too much because I don't disagree with that. Because I think he's one of the real cases in which his mentality, the things that are going on in his head, really do affect what happens on the field. Like I said about, you know, he has a tendency to switch back to old habits when things don't seem to get work. He's not patient in terms of his mechanics. So that I don't have a problem with that. I think he found success in San Diego. I would have liked to see him stay there to realize more, but I'm not buying in 100% on Melvin Upton, so I'm a little bit more I'm a little bit more scared about this move than I think a lot of people. And I'm kind of in agreement with you, Chuck.
Yeah, I mean, in this like a draft like we're doing now in our three sport draft, unless I really really need stolen bases at the end of the draft, I'm going to let somebody else gamble on Melvin Upton putting back to back good years together.
Well, you should let someone else gamble on Justin Upton too.
Yeah, I'm going to do that as well. By the way,
yeah, what year are we in where Melvin Upton is the one who's having the breakout year?
It's the apocalypse.
It really is. Let's go ahead and move on over to his replacement over in San Diego. Travis Jankowski seems to be probably the biggest winner from the Melvin Upton trade of the people left in San Diego. Chuck, what are your thoughts on Jankowski going forward?
Well, you know, when he's only 25 years old, it's really ugly to see that he only has 7 RBIs in 75 games, you know, but at the same time, he's got a 358 on base percentage, which, you know, with his profile, his speed profile certainly seems to be something that can add to that threat. You know, I think the interesting thing about San Diego now is I think somehow or another, it's going to be a basically wide open roster for roles going forward. So for, next year and for the rest of this season, it just seems like he's going to get a really long audition because there really is not that much else around him. And, that 358 OBP for a guy just starting out in the bigs, I think that's a pretty good sign that he might be a viable source of steals here over the next couple years.
Eli, what are your thoughts on him?
I think he's got some value. He's similar to Billy Hamilton in that he's going to give you, he's going to murder you in the power department. He's not going to score a ton of runs. He's not going to be an asset in average, but he's going to get a bunch of steals. They're letting him run wild in San Diego. The one thing I do like, unlike Billy Hamilton, this guy knows how to draw a goddamn walk. The walk rate 14.5%. That's fantastic. So even though the average is at 237, like Chuck said, the OBP 358, that's the kind of OBP you need to have value if you're this kind of player. The one thing that does scare me, though, is the 27.5% strikeout rate. Based on previous track record, I definitely think that's going to come down, and it's going to need to because the BABIP's at 348, which is really high, and his average is still only 237. So if he's going to be better than Billy Hamilton or like a legit fantasy asset in maybe two categories, he's going to have to cut down that strikeout rate so the average can jump. But for the back end of your roster, he's definitely going to provide value. Ride him while he's hot, steal the bases right now, and see how it goes for a couple weeks.
Yeah, the strikeout rate really concerns me a lot. I think the fact that he's walking at such a high clip is really amazing and great, but I think pitchers are going to start attacking him until he can prove he can hit. I mean, he's striking out at 27.5% rate. He also only has a 237 average. The dude is not a very good hitter. He needs to walk to have value. And if pitchers start making him prove that he can hit and hit for a little bit more power than he's shown, I think he could be in trouble. This is a guy I would look to sell.
I always have a hard time. I understand what you're saying, but I always have a hard time with this dynamic. You know, a guy who's striking out a lot and walking a lot. Okay, like, does that mean that he's looking at too many pitches and maybe he should be more aggressive at the plate? Or does that mean that, you know, it depends on how these strikeouts versus these walks are developing to me. And I'm sure there's a way statistically to figure it out online, but I'm just not savvy enough to delve in to figure out, you know, what kind of difference is he striking out on a lot of 3-2 pitches or a lot of 7-8 pitch at bats? Or is he working a walk or striking out on 3 or 4 pitches, I mean, that makes a big difference in his value going forward. That's not always the easiest thing to track from afar.
It looks like he does strike out quite a bit on... I'm having a hard time deciphering this, as he said. I think he's, you know, swinging at everything in the zone. But he's got a pretty good eye. And so he's getting away with things that he probably shouldn't. I think if pitchers come in on him more, he's going to struggle. And that's just, you know, looking at kind of where he's at in terms of, let me see his on-base percentage, splits. Yeah, I've got to watch him a little bit more. I'm a little bit skeptical of someone with a 27% strikeout rate that's never had this high of an OBP, I believe, even in the minors. So I think he is a guy that you should ride while he's hot. If you could try to get anything for him, I would, but considering what his name value is, you probably won't. And a lot of people are expecting Manny Margot to come up at some point anyways.
I'm hearing he's not coming up till September. From a lot of places. Yeah, I picked him up speculatively in one league, and then I heard a report that they're kind of being patient with him. So I don't know if it's going
to
happen.
They have no reason to bring him up either. So
yeah. That could be service time stuff, too.
He's also got a minor, I think, hamstring injury. Like, really, he's fine, but I just don't think he's coming up the next month from what I've been hearing.
All right. Let's move over to Michael Pineda. Eli, what are your thoughts on Pineda? Because his numbers... aren't as bad as they seem.
I know. Yeah, I agree. The 5 ERA is petrifying. The 1.33 whip isn't great. Obviously, he's on pace to give up 31 homers. That's a problem. But I still like him. I mean, he's on pace for 219 strikeouts in 183 innings. The walks aren't outrageous. I mean, they're worse than they were last year, but there's no way he was going to repeat that 1.18 walks per nine last year. The 2.46 is reasonable. If he can just keep the ball in the park, I really do like him. Like I said, the ERA is 5, but the FIP is 3.86 and the XFIP is 3.24. So I think the BABIP's going to come down. The strand rate's going to go up. Maybe he'll. I think he's been getting a little unlucky with the homers and fly balls. I know Yankee Stadium's not a great place to pitch, but still, I do think I mean, the last 10 starts, he's been pretty damn good. He's had basically a quality start every time out except against Boston and at Chicago. So for the most part, he's turning things around, and I think he's been getting unlucky, and that's going to start changing his direction, and he's going to be a legit fantasy asset the rest of the way.
I think he's one of those guys that will be more valuable if he gets moved out of Yankee Stadium.
Yeah, that would help.
And he was one of the guys that was mentioned as a potential part of the Chapman deal if Soler was going to be included. So I think the Yankees could end up moving Pineda, and you would see a sharp decline in that almost 18% home run fly ball rate, which is absolutely ridiculous. He's got a career average of, you know, about 11.5%, and he's now he's sporting, you know, just about an 18% home run to fly ball rate. I think there's a lot to be excited about. You mentioned the FIP and XFIP. His Sierra, which for a guy like him, I tend to want to use because of his strikeout ability, is a 331. So I think we are starting to see a turnaround in Pineda, and I think that maybe this is the time to buy in on him if you can. Chuck, what are your thoughts on Pineda?
Well, I mean, I guess, you know, I have a base impression of him that he's a guy that I would love to own in a points league where blow up starts don't hurt you so much. He just strikes me as a guy that runs really hot and really cold. And, you know, even in recent years, when he's had three or four good starts, all of a sudden he'll have one start where he gets really pounded on. And some of that is Yankee Stadium, which is so ridiculous to right field. It's the most ridiculous field in baseball. I mean, every time the ball's hit hard to right field, you think it's gone in Yankee Stadium. So that part of it I get. I mean, he's a really talented guy, and it's eye-popping, 135 strikeouts in 113 innings pitched. I get that part of it, but how heavily I'm willing to invest in a guy who has been dinged up frequently. He had the suspension for, the huge swath of pine tar across his neck that was almost like streaming onto his jersey. I mean, I just think there's something a little bit off with the guy because he's a talented guy. He's a huge guy. He's a presence on the mound. It just looks like by now he should have had long stretches of putting it together, and he puts it together for a stretch. Then he gets blown up for a couple of starts, and it looks like he's coming back. So there's durability issues, and there's some consistency issues that I could overlook in a points league, but there's always going to be somebody higher than me on Pineda in Roto.
All right, let's go ahead and move over to Ryan Schmimpf. I don't know how to say it, of San Diego, who's another guy that's getting more playing time opportunities currently. He has 9 home runs so far this year, has almost a very similar line to Jankowski. Eli, what are your thoughts on Ryan Schmimpf?
Well, before I give my thoughts, can we just agree right now that this is the last Padre or former Padre we talk about on this podcast?
No guarantees.
Anyway, yes, the power's been impressive. He's got 9 homers in 33 games, slugging .608. He slugged .729 in 51 games in AAA this year. The power's fairly legit, but I do like the 12% walk rate, but this guy strikes out in a crazy clip. I don't think that 29% is coming down because if you look at his minor league track record, he strikes out like 26% in like AA. Like if you strike out a 26% in AA, it's only going to get worse in the majors. So I could even see that strikeout rate go up. I think he's going to kill you on average. I don't think he's not going to steal any bases. He's in a bad lineup in a bad park for the most part. So even if he does hit home runs, I don't think he's going to drive in a ton of runs or score a ton of runs even with those walks. I think if you really, really need the homers, fine, roll with him until he cools down. But I think if you're counting on him to be anything more than just crappy power, then I think you're probably looking in the wrong place. This is a 28-year-old. I know he's had some success in the minor leagues, but if it's taken you this long to get to the major leagues, it's because you're a one-note player, and I don't think that's what he is. So don't get excited.
Chuck, what are your thoughts on Ryan Schmimpf?
Boy, his minor league track record really jumps out when you look at it. His batting average was always, always low. Never batted 300 until suddenly this year in the minors where he hit in the 350s for the year. So, you know, and it, He's older player. He's, you know, 28 years old plus, and he doesn't run at all. You've got to wonder. I forget the young second baseman's name who's been hurt most of the year in San Diego, but his role is Corey Spangenberg. So I think his role is real shaky to boot. You know, and in the National League, you don't get the
well. I believe he's also playing the outfield some.
Oh, but you also get the fall. You don't have the fallback of the DH. So it's another organization it's in the opposite form of a transition to figuring out what they're going to try and do here going forward. So I remember when AJ Preller was, considered the kid genius out in San Diego, but it hasn't gone very well here. And so, you know, it's 348 OBP is once again kind of shocking, and it does mirror Jankowski and the low batting average and the relatively decent OBP. It's just hard to imagine a guy with this profile being able to survive long term in the bigs.
Yeah, I was incorrect. He's not playing in the outfield some. He was he played a little bit of third in the minors as well, but he's mostly a second baseman. Spangenberg, I don't know if he's coming back this year. I'd have to double check. Yeah. But as far as Schimpf goes, I think this is the definition of a quad A player. And for those who don't know, a quad A player is someone who's too good for triple A, but not good enough for the majors. That can't be anything more than a role player, you know, kind of a role player bench guy in the major league level, but always tears up kind of minor league pitching. And I think that's what we have here in Ryan Schimpf. I think Eli's analysis of an empty power guy is 100% correct. I don't really want to have anything to do with him outside of NL-only leagues, so that's where I'm going to leave it at that.
Apparently, 2 weeks ago, Spangenberg suffered another tear of his quad.
Yeah.
So that's right. It's not looking good on him on that front.
Yeah, I seem to remember. He just, you know, because he was a guy, Spangenberg was a guy I was really highly invested in this year.
Yeah, I liked him. He was 10th overall pick in the draft, like, 4 years ago or something.
Yeah, and I mean, he was a guy that had second base and third base eligibility that people really thought, you know, I thought people really kind of sleeping on as a guy who could steal 25 to 30 bags.
Mm-hmm.
And he just, his season never happened.
Yeah, that's a bummer.
Let's move over to Justin Verlander, who is not a quad A player and is pitching really well right now. Chuck, what are your thoughts on Justin Verlander right now?
Well, I was heavily invested in Verlander this year, and that involved me changing my mind last year. You know, the middle of last year, he really seemed to take a step forward and figure out how to pitch with only good velocity instead of extremely good velocity like he used to have when he was younger. You know, I think he's a top 15 starting pitcher going into next year. I really do. I mean, he's leading the American League in innings pitched. His strikeout rate has been huge ever since June. I think that with as much uncertainty as there is, like I would rather have, I know I'm really low on this guy, but I would rather have Verlander next year than David Price. I think we're seeing some consistent, very good performance out of him. He's got a lot of track record. They rely on him for a lot of innings. He pitches in a better park than Price does. I see the trends are a lot better. I think one is trending one way and one is trending the other. So I'm huge on Verlander. I will probably end up with him in the three sport league.
Eli, what are your thoughts on Verlander?
I'm kind of with Chuck a little bit here.
Jesus Christ, people!
I'm not maybe not as extreme, but maybe not top 15, but. He's on pace for 231 strikeouts. He's going crazy deep into games, like Chuck said. He's on pace for 220 innings. The whip is barely over one. I mean, he seems to be turning things around. I think he doesn't have the electric stuff quite as he used to, but he's learned how to pitch more. He hasn't really been getting lucky or anything like that. If anything, the BABIP might be a little lucky, but the homer to fly ball has probably been unlucky. So his FIP is actually 3.65. His ERA is 3.64. So, I mean, he is what he is right now. An innings eater who gives you a bunch of strikeouts, doesn't have many blow-up starts, gets you some wins on a pretty decent team. There's a lot to like here.
I think there is a lot to like, too. But the idea that he's a top 15 starter next year, to me, is a little bit crazy.
Well, I mean, I think it sounds more outlandish than what it is. I think I kind of get that from when I plotted out the first couple rounds of the draft and I started to feel out the tiers for the pitching. And you're like a couple people, you know, now that Matt Harvey's out of the picture, you know, you're a couple people away from him.
But Matt Harvey isn't out of the picture for next year. He's supposed to be ready for the start of the season.
Yeah.
I would rather have Matt Harvey next year than Justin Verlander.
Oh, I would. I don't trust. I want to see what he would look like when he came back before I would go that far. I don't like injured guys. Remember that? That's one thing about me.
No,
I don't
like that.
And
I'm a little bit more willing to take that risk.
Justin's probably going to draft Garrett Richards.
I will not be drafting Garrett Richards because he hasn't had the surgery yet, which is absolutely insane. I really want to draft him though. I just top 15 means you're taking Verlander over Danny Salazar.
Hell no. I think it's close.
No way. Salazar, all the way there.
Verlander over Carlos Martinez.
I would rather have Martinez.
Yeah, you got to defer to the National League guy on that. But it's close.
Verlander over Carlos Carrasco.
Oh, Carrasco.
See, those guys have all gone in the top 10, though, in the draft that we're doing now. I mean, I'm not disagreeing with what you're saying, because I wouldn't want Verlander over those guys, but I think he's right after those guys.
Verlander or Quintana?
Verlander.
See, I'll take Quintana, because I don't think either has gigantic upside anymore, but I think the floor in Quintana is so much safer.
Yeah, I think I'm with Justin on this, but I'm obviously obsessed with Quintana. So.
Yeah, but Quintana's strikeout rate is not close to what Verlander's is this year, is it?
It's not all that far off, I don't think.
Oh, okay. I could be wrong.
It's not as good, but it's not.
Yeah.
Let's see. Verlander is at a 9.3, and I can't spell Quintana.
Oh, come on. Quintana has 116 Ks in 130 innings, so, you know, obviously not as good, but so he's on pace for 188 Ks. So.
Yeah,
Quintana pitches in a much worse park.
Yeah. This is true, and for a much worse team.
Yeah. Well, we want to stress that.
Yeah, a really, really poor team. I mean,
hey, they're 50 and 50. Go suck it.
All right, let's go ahead and move on before Eli has an aneurysm. and we'll talk about the next guy on our list, which is Mack Williamson of a fantastic team. Just an amazing team. Eli, what are your thoughts on Mack Williamson so far?
I've always liked Mack Williamson. I actually drafted him in the Dynasty League like 4 years ago, thinking he was going to be some power stud. But, you know... He's definitely got the power, but what else does he have? Does he have a full lock on playing time the rest of the way? I mean, even if he does, is he going to give you anything other than home runs? Probably not. I'm more interested in what you think, because you get to watch him every day.
I think he has got a really good shot at some full-time playing time rest of the way.
You don't think they're going to try to make a move for a veteran? That's kind of what the Giants do.
It is, but who are they going to go get? I mean, I could see them go after Carlos Beltran because
I don't think he costs very much. Well, I think he might cost more than you think. He's pretty good.
Well, but he's also in the last year of his deal.
Yeah, I know. But...
So, there was a lot of talk that they could go after Braun, but I don't think they've got the pieces for it. I mean, the Giants do not have a very good minor league system.
No.
You know, it's not atrocious. I mean, we're not talking like Angels bad, but it's not very good. And so I just don't know if they have the pieces. I like what I've seen from Mack Williamson. He's a guy who does have a ton of power. I think he's got more speed than he shows. It may not translate into stolen bases because he just hasn't been stealing a ton of bases necessarily. But, I mean, he had 10 in 2013, 6 in 2014.
Yeah, you're stretching. So, you're really grasping at straws with that.
What do you mean I'm grasping at straws? Because I think he has speed? Watch him play the outfield.
I'm not saying he's not fast, but the last time he stole more than 6 bases was 2013 in A-ball. Like, get out of here.
I'm not saying, like I said, it may not translate, but I think he's a guy who can hit for a decent average. He's walking at a fair clip so far in his major league stint. this year, walking at almost 10% rate. I think this is a guy who, in 15-team leagues, is under-owned. Go ahead, Eli.
No, I was just going to say, I just think he's a good hitter. I just think he's like the prototypical NL bench bat pinch hitter kind of guy. And the Giants are notorious for trading for veterans at the deadline. So I just, it may not be, I don't know, it may not be like a big name like Beltran, but it's going to be somebody.
I think you're right in terms of the fact that we'll really know his true value next week.
Yeah.
Like, you know, on Sunday when the trade deadline passes, we'll have a better idea of his full value. But I'm willing to take a shot on him now if he's available, because I think there's a really good chance that the Giants decide Hunter Pence is coming back here shortly. Gregor Blanco is a fantastic fourth outfielder. If they end up trading...
A compliment? Maybe they trade for Melky.
Hey, I wouldn't mind a trade for Melky. But, I mean, a trade for any outfielder at this point relegates Williamson back down in the minors, and he has, I think, earned his playing time. I think if they do anything, they go out and get bullpen help.
You can have David Robertson.
I would take David Robertson at this point. Chuck, what are your thoughts on Mac Williamson going forward?
Well, I found his minor league track record to be fairly uninspiring. I mean, his OBP was decent most of the stretches. An odd thing that I noted about him is that his real first name is Jonathan. And Jonathan Williamson, that's like a really long name. That's like a bubble test nightmare. I don't know if people still take bubble tests or not, but I had to take them a lot way back when I was young. So, you know,
my last name is Rosenzweig, so I don't want to hear it.
I suppose you don't. But do you
is it Elias or Elijah?
Neither, it's Eli. But I have two middle names, so if I ever had to write that out, that would take a while.
I actually have three middle names.
Oh, tough guy. You always got to one-up me, Justin.
Well, I feel it's pretty easy.
I feel so small. My middle name is John. I feel so small right now. It's unbelievable. Anyway, I just want to say that I completely agree with Eli that from what I've seen of him, I strongly believe that he's going to end up being sort of a bench guy at best in NL only. And I just want to mention, unless I'm misremembering, that Carlos Beltran complained about being in San Francisco like a week after he was there the last time, I believe. So unless I got the wrong person in my head.
I think you're thinking Justin Upton.
Justin Upton was in San Francisco?
When he was visiting, he complained about the shadows coming off of the shadows and the reflection coming off the scoreboard.
Wasn't Beltran a Giant?
Beltran was a Giant. I don't remember him complaining that about being there, though.
I thought he spent like a week in San Francisco and said there was no way he would re-up there because we would never want to hit there for a full season.
Justin Upton complaining about the shadows is acting like, more like a baby than Chris Sale.
Beltran was acquired from the Mets as part of the Zach Wheeler trade in 2013. I don't remember him complaining, but I remember he didn't win us a World Series, so I he was kind of dead to me.
Oh, the humanity. Yeah.
Just makes me wonder if they would really want to revisit that or not, which, you know, like you said, there's a lot of options there, too. Part of the reasons I brought up the Yankees earlier in the podcast is because I don't think they can really kind of figure out what they want to do, as if they want to stay relevant. I think they want to pretend like they're still in it, which is kind of silly. But I agree
understand what the Yankees are doing in terms of trading away talent at this point.
You know? The only thing I can see is that this was the last months that they had Chapman, and I think that, you know, their bullpen is still pretty well set with Betances and Andrew Miller. So I can get this if this is the only move that they make, but they could go either way. They could decide that they're going to trade off some pieces too, which would be really interesting to see where they would land, like Pineda, like we talked about earlier.
Correction, Beltran was part of the Giants in 2011 during that run. But the Zach Wheeler part is
so they correct. Did. So he did win a title then?
No. Is 2011 an even year?
So I'm an idiot.
That's another reason why you don't want to own Williamson, though, because if you know you don't want to own him next year because next year is the wrong year.
All right. On that note, I'm moving on to Colin McHugh. Eli, what are your thoughts on Colin McHugh moving forward? No intro. I'm just going to you cold on that one.
Yeah, you know, Colin McHugh is actually pretty good. I know he started off the year as like the worst pitcher alive, but if you look at his career numbers, he had a 3.89 ERA last year, a 2.73 the year before that. And even though with the rough start this year, he's got it all the way back down to 4.18. And I know the whip's still terrible, but lately he's been really good. He's getting a ton of strikeouts. I can't believe that he's got so many strikeouts. He did have 171 last year, so I guess this shouldn't be completely surprising. And it's not a great place to pitch, but he's on a pretty good team. He's turning things around, gets a bunch of strikeouts. His walks, he's always limited. So as long as he can avoid the long ball and blow up innings, he's going to be pretty good, pretty reliable. So I think he's actually going to be a fairly solid asset the rest of the way. And people maybe wrote him off too soon after the bad start and kind of forgot that, you know what, he's been pretty good the last couple of years.
He's been fantastic since the middle of June. So in his last seven starts, he's got a 2.49 ERA and 43 strikeouts. He's coming off of two starts where he's had 6 and 10 strikeouts. I think this is a guy to really key on as someone who's not getting enough credit for turning his season around. He looks much better. He is limiting the walks a little bit. But he's doing all this great work with a 3.27 BABIP over the course of the last 6 weeks. So I mean, I think this is pretty legitimate. I really like McHugh. I picked him up in the Barf League about 2 months ago and have been very pleasantly surprised with his production, given how poorly he started the season. Chuck, what are your thoughts on McHugh moving forward?
I don't think I ever remember listening to a buildup that I disagree with more.
Whoa, all right.
ever, which is quite a statement. When I was looking through his stats, I wanted to see if he generally started slow, okay? And he generally does not. Let me show you how inconsistent of a pitcher Colin McHugh has been in recent years. He has a 2.66 ERA in July, okay? Last July, his ERA was 5.12. Okay, this April, he had a 6.65 ERA. Last April, he had a 2.03 ERA. I mean, there's like, it's been such a roller coaster over the last 3 years. And, you know, and I don't blame you. You picked him up. He's doing really well. I don't mean it that way. I just mean, I don't hold out hope when I see someone who is up and down like 3.5-4 runs every month, is the swing in their ERA. I don't hold out a lot of hope for a guy who plays in a bad park on top of it, that he's suddenly this is who he is for the last, 6 weeks. And he was an older prospect when he began. So, I mean, I'm not saying he's not someone that you can own. I'm just saying if you're relying on him as more than your fourth starter in fantasy,
I think he's playing a dangerous game. I picked him up off the waiver wire in a 12-team, expert league. This is not a guy that you're counting on to be your number three starter. I think what this is a guy who's learning how to pitch and is doing a fairly good job of it. Go look at Eno Saris's fantastic article about guys who are limiting hard contact and have the lowest exit velocity for pitchers. Because Colin McHugh is sixth on that list in all of Major League Baseball, ranked right ahead of Felix Hernandez, Clayton Kershaw, Rich Hill, Jake Arrieta, and Aaron Nola. This is a guy who's doing his best to limit exit velocity, but still put balls in play. I think that is a really, really good sign for McHugh moving forward.
Yeah, I feel like Chuck's forgetting that McHugh was pretty good in 2015 and 2014.
Yeah, I don't enjoy owning players that I have this big swing in performance from month to month, and maybe that's a personal weakness on my part. But, I also remember the fact that McHugh is, a guy who was basically released by the Mets because they didn't think he had the stuff. And
They made a mistake.
They did make a mistake because he had one really good year, and now he's coming up on two viable years for being a rotation piece. But, I guess I'm not nearly as high on him going forward as you guys are, between his situation and the fluctuations I've seen in his runs. Because, you draft a guy, and if he's terrible for the first month and a half, he ends up on waivers like he did this year. And so, as far as investing in him is future stock, he's somebody that I'm just going to let somebody else ride the roller coaster on personally.
All right, fair enough. Let's move over to Hanley Ramirez, who has absolutely been killing the ball in the second half. I believe he's got 5 or 6 home runs already, which almost, almost equaled his amount of home runs for the first half. I believe he had 7 first half, 6 in the second half so far. Chuck, what are your thoughts on Hanley moving forward?
I wrote 2 words down on my card, and those 2 words are no way. I think
is this because he doesn't have a very good mentality?
Well, I mean, you know, if I wanted to make a case for another player who's like that, I mean, we have, as fantasy owners, we've been battling Hanley Ramirez his entire career. You know, who exactly is he? He could hit for average if he wanted. He could run if he wanted. He could hit for power if he wanted. When he wanted to do any of those things was really anyone's guess. You know, and that's how his career has basically played out. He's an ultra talented guy. You know, if he falls far enough in a draft, I can see, you know, putting him in there and seeing how he does. But I think any serious investment in Hanley Ramirez is always dangerous because at this point, because he looks pretty fragile. He doesn't run very well anymore. Last year, he was dinged up for most of the year. Hanley Ramirez is hot as a pistol right now, you know, blasting home runs all the time, and he's in a great lineup. So I think other people are going to be quite a bit higher on him going forward than I am.
Yeah, I wrote about him. I did a blurb on him for my AL Alderney outfield tiers. And I pretty much said this is like the perfect candidate to sell if you're in a rebuilding mode in a keeper dynasty league, because he's got little to no value next year. I mean, he does. I mean, he's moving to first base. I mean, you know, he's going to be a guy who's like a 15 home run hitter with like 5 to 10 steals next year at first base. That has no value in today's game outside of AL only. So like, this is the perfect guy to sell right now if you're looking to rebuild. But other than that, like, I can't really advocate for him very much. I like to see that he's got a little bit more pop left in his bat. Maybe he could get to back to 19, 20 home runs this year. But I'm not going to bank on that. He most benefits from the lineup he's in and the park he hits in. And unfortunately, Hanley was a guy that back in his early playing days when he, you know, hit, you know, in 2007 when he hit 29 home runs and stole 51 bases, I loved the guy. But that is almost a decade ago, and it's... I think the Hanley train is probably over. Eli, what are your thoughts on Hanley Ramirez?
I'm not sure I'm on board with you, Justin. And obviously, he does take a ding going from outfield to first base eligibility the next year. And I do agree that, yeah, you should probably trade him if you're not competing. And it does make sense. But I do think he's going to have more value than you think. I mean, I'll take a first baseman these days is not a very deep position. I'll take a guy that's capable of hitting 275 plus with 20 homers, 80 runs, like 90 RBIs. I mean, that's like a good Freddie Freeman. Like, I'm fine with that. And sprinkle in 5 to 10 steals. I think Hanley's got more value than you seem to think. I know there's always an injury risk and all that, but, I mean, he's obviously in a fantastic park, great lineup. He's still got some pop. He still knows what he's doing out there, even though he frustrates us because he doesn't hustle all the time or whatever. But I think he's got legit value. I'm a little surprised you're so down on him for next year.
Well, let's do a would you rather for next year with Hanley Ramirez and other first basemen.
Okay, let's do that.
Would you rather Hanley Ramirez or Eric Hosmer?
Oh, well, come on. Hosmer is a stud. Right. It's Hosmer.
It's Hosmer, not even close.
Hanley Ramirez or Freddie Freeman?
I'll
take Freeman.
I'll take Hanley.
I would take Freeman. I think Eli is underestimating the possibility that Hanley gets some sort of bug in his rear and just, you know, decides that he's going to loaf around and be hurt for the entire year. I mean, I agree with what Eli says about his ceiling and his capabilities, but I think he's got a really dangerous floor that you don't have at all with Freeman.
Freeman's a little safer, but I think Hanley's got maybe a little bit more upside. I just think in that lineup, Freeman's going to struggle to score as many runs as Hanley. He's not going to drive in as many runs as Hanley, and the average is going to be similar, and Hanley might sprinkle in a couple extra steals than Freeman. So the only thing Freeman really has over Hanley is just power, I feel like.
Hanley or Chris Carter?
Hanley.
Hanley not close. I don't think Chris Carter will be in the league next year.
Justin is obsessed with Chris Carter. Well, I think you're wrong on that, but Justin's obsessed with guys who just blast homers and do jack shit else.
Well, if Chris he's got 56 RBIs, 47 runs. It's not bad at this point in the year. All right,
fine. But I just feel like, forget Chicks dig the long ball. Justin digs the long ball.
Dig the long ball.
Chris Carter is not a bench player type of guy, and if he's going to hit 215 and, you know, hit homers for 2 months of the season and then stop hitting them, I don't really, which is basically what he's done in recent years, I don't see, he's not the kind of guy you're going to keep around on the bench to pinch hit once or twice a week to strike out. So I'm at a loss at what his role is with a major league club going forward. And maybe that might be Brewer frustration. Yeah, I don't know. But
I think it's Brewer frustration. Hanley Ramirez or Brandon Belt?
Mm-hmm.
I can't believe that the silence.
Oh, I would. I'd much rather have Belt
in an OBP league. Definitely. I gotta look at Brandon Belt's numbers right now. I have to cheat.
All right, go cheat while I
think it's close though.
Where I ask Hanley Ramirez or Adrian Gonzalez.
I'm worried about Gonzalez's back.
I'm taking Hanley over Belt. It's fucking close though.
Wow.
I'm gonna take Hanley over Gonzalez because to me,
Adrian Gonzalez is done.
There's such a huge difference in lineup depth of those two lineups. I mean, you know, and there's equal amount of risk just about in injuries and what have you. So I'm gonna take.
I think you guys are all crazy. I'm taking Adrian Gonzalez. I'm taking Brandon Belt. I think Chris Carter is actually close.
Oh,
you shut your whore mouth. I want to move. Let's just move on to the next topic.
All right, let's move on to Blake Snell, who has pitched up a little bit better since his return from the minors. Chuck, what are your thoughts on Blake Snell moving forward?
Well, I own him in a very important long-term keeper league, and I'm making this comp to myself mentally, and I'm curious as to what you guys think of it. The first thing I want to do, though, before I bring up the comp, is he had four stops in a row in the minors where he had 10-plus Ks per nine. He's only 23 years old. He's got a 3.05 ERA and a 3.12 FIP. He's got an 8.1 K per nine, but I strongly, strongly think it's going to go up. The comp comes in here, okay? He's got a 1.42 whip, okay? And he had a 1.29 career whip in the minors. The perfect comp to me, they even throw from the same side, is Gio Gonzalez. That's who I think Blake Snell is.
I think that's a really interesting comp.
I think it's solid.
Yeah, I don't have any problem with the comp because Gio Gonzalez has shown signs of dominance, and I think Blake Snell shows signs of dominance, but I also wonder sometimes if he's going to walk six guys in an outing.
That's where the comp comes in.
Yeah, so I being a lefty makes sense. I actually kind of like the comp quite a bit. I want to like Blake Snell more than I liked Gio Gonzalez coming up, but I think you're kind of nailed that one pretty well there. Eli, what are your thoughts on Blake Snell?
Yeah, I really like him. I think the walks are just going to continue to be a problem. I mean, he was dominant in AAA with 13 strikeouts per nine, but even still, his whip was like 1.40 or whatever it was. Like, I mean, that's tough to do. Like, he walks everybody. His walk rate in AAA was 4, and no surprise, it's 4.5 in the majors. I know he's been better lately, but I think if you're desperate for pitching, you just have to sign. You just have to pick him up and hope that he is dominant the rest of the way. I know it's not all that likely, but if you're desperate, you just need to roll with talent and hope to get lucky. This is the kind of guy that has the talent. Obviously, it's a great place to pitch. It's a tough division, obviously. So I think you maybe strategically sit him in certain spots, but I like that he pitched six shutout innings at Coors Field, only allowing one hit a couple weeks ago. So I think Blake Snell's got the potential to really give you a boost in the second half. Just be smart where you start him and don't expect. Like, you know, also have a backup plan. Also, you know, he's not going to be the savior, but he's got a chance to really do some damage for you.
I think this is the time to sell Blake Snell if you can. He has, especially in redraft leagues. I understand people wanting to keep and hold on to him in Dynasty and keeper formats, but he currently has a 4.71 Sierra, a 4.44 XFIP, and his home run to fly ball rate is 2.3%. Like, those numbers do not make sense.
He's only allowed one homer in 44 innings. Jesus.
Yeah, I mean, that's going to change. And that's going to change quick and harshly. I would expect some blow-up starts kind of rest of the way to kind of equal out some of his amazing starts. I think this is a guy to kind of move. And I think Chuck's compa of Gio Gonzalez makes a lot of sense because, like I said, there are moments in which you see him and he looks really dominant, and then moments where he can't find the strike zone. I think there's going to be issues with that moving forward. I mean, a walk rate of 4.47 walks per nine, that isn't inspiring a ton of confidence to me for a guy who can hold up a 3 ERA. So I would try to sell him right now and see what I could get. You know, try to, you know, frame it as, hey, you know, this is a guy that is realizing his potential. What can I get for him? Because you might get some prospect hounds that will be willing to pay a fair penny, especially in keeper and dynasty leagues.
Would you somewhere prefer... Mike is listening to this and shaking his fist, threatening.
Oh, I'm going to get such an earful from Mike over this. It's crazy.
Would you guys prefer Sean Manaea, or would you prefer Blake Snell going forward?
Good question.
For rest of this season, or in terms of long term?
Oh, in terms of long term, this year and next, at least.
This year, I would prefer Manaea. I think he's just a tad bit more polished.
Better division as well, and also a great park to pitch into.
I mean, Tampa Bay is not a bad park to pitch in, but the division definitely makes a difference. In terms of long term, I think I'm about equal on him, which means, like, because I think in a dynasty league right now, you could trade Snell and get Manaea in another piece.
Agreed. Yeah.
So, I agree,
like,
as well.
I think they're about on the same level. I'm really high on Manaea. It's nothing necessarily against Blake Snell. But I think you could get Manaea and Oswaldo Arcia for Blake Snell.
Yeah.
You know, I think that's the kind of package I would look for, and I think I could get that. Or a veteran, you know. Could you get somebody like Freddie Freeman and Manaea for Blake Snell to a team that is looking to rebuild? I think you might be able to.
I might have to throw in another piece for it, but I still agree with your base premise quite a bit.
Okay.
So
let's talk about our last guy real quick. That is Trevor Story, who I believe is like the number one shortstop on the player radar over the course of the last 15 or 30 days. He has rebounded from kind of the rookie wall that he hit at one point. I mean, he started off super hot this year, hit a little bit of a rookie wall, but it has rebounded fairly nicely. I was kind of just wanting to gauge your guys' interest in him long term, in terms of next season. Where do you see Trevor Story being drafted next year, and is he going to be over or under drafted? Eli.
Oh, man, this is a tough one. You don't see this happen. We're going to talk about a rookie shortstop on pace for 44 homers, 115 RBIs, and 105 runs. The hell is happening? I feel like in a normal scenario, that's like a first-round pick the following year. I don't think that's going to happen this time, because I do think a lot of people expect the numbers to come down a little bit, especially when you're looking at a guy on pace for over 200 strikeouts. But I think I'd draft him in the third round next year. What do you guys think?
Well, I think he's going to go earlier than that.
Yeah, I know. I think he's going to go early as well. But would you pull the trigger in the middle of the second round on him?
I couldn't do it. No.
Yeah,
I mean, I think he's going to end up as a fifth-round pick for me, and I think that means I'm completely out on him, which I'm okay with. I mean, I still see some holes in his swing, I think he's extremely Coors-aided. But that's not a bad thing, because he plays in Coors half his game, so... But I don't think I could pull the trigger. I mean, taking him in the second round means you're giving up on guys like George Springer or an elite starting pitcher.
I'd rather have Story.
I'd rather have Story than Springer.
Whoa. I would too. I would too, man.
I couldn't do it.
They're like the same player, except Story plays short instead of outfield, and Story plays a course. So I'm surprised that you disagree with that.
I just I don't believe that this. I think this is a once in a lifetime season. This isn't. I mean, if you listen, go listen to ITL's most recent podcast. Mike Warner, our boy, was on there, and I believe this was on their podcast. They were talking about like only twice in Major League Baseball history has a shortstop had this good of a season in his rookie year.
Yeah.
The other two, I believe,
A-Rod.
No, it wasn't A-Rod. It was Cal Ripken and Nomar. And what?
Why,
and what it was,
why are you holding that against him?
Do you believe he's Cal Ripken or Nomar? I don't. I mean,
no, but Coors Field. See, Chuck always says Coors Field's not that bad. It's somewhat normal. Yankee Stadium is the craziest park. No, fuck you, Chuck. Coors Field is still the number one crazy park.
I never meant to imply that Coors Field isn't crazy. What I meant to imply is that pitchers could go there with a mindset that they were going to outpitch their opponent and pitch reasonably well enough to actually be pitchers that are fantasy relevant. I never said that it wasn't crazy. It is a crazy place to pitch, and the thing that's going to happen is that we're talking about something completely different. Is Trevor Story gets to beat up on all these relievers that, you know, these middling relievers that go there and hang breaking pitches and stuff in Coors in the middle of games that are already 8-6 in the fifth inning. I mean, you know, I like to cash in on the Coors effect when I can, and I would be comfortable taking Trevor Story in the middle to late second round next year.
Yeah, the 31.5% strikeout rate scares me. The BABIP's way too high.
I don't know, man. I mean, that's what he does, though. If you look at his minor league track record, his BABIP is always through the roof. His BABIP in AAA last year was the exact same, 341. His BABIP in AA, 350. It's high A, 467, and that was in 50 games. Like, this is high A, 343. Low A, 335. I mean, this is what he does.
I can't buy the 31% strikeout rate. I really can't.
Well, he's going to be in a great – remember, he's going to be in a great environment for counting stats.
Yeah.
And regardless of if Cargo gets traded or not, he's still going to have Arenado. You know, LeMahieu is a very underrated major league player at this point. I mean, he's not he's a better real player than he is a fantasy player.
He's got 25% home run to fly ball rate. I mean, that's coming down. I just think there are numbers that are coming down. I'm not saying he's not good. I'm just saying this is going to be the Carlos Correa of next year. That everybody's going to buy in. Everybody's going to buy into the young shortstop. He's going to go too early, and he's probably going to disappoint some. He's still going to be good, but he's just not going to return draft value next year.
Middle to late second round is a lot different than, you know, a top six or seven pick like Correa was going. To me, I mean, I know what you're saying.
I completely agree.
The hype could go too far.
And we have no idea. I mean, I don't know where Trevor Story went in the three sport league we're drafting right now.
Early,
but it was way earlier than I had him. Let's do a quick would you rather with the top shortstops for next year: Trevor Story or Manny Machado?
Machado because of the dual eligibility.
Yeah, right. Machado. I mean, you have to go with Machado there.
Trevor Story or Xander Bogaerts?
Fenway's basically Coors Field, American League version. That place is a fucking joke to hit. So I'm going Bogaerts.
I would go with Bogaerts as well, but I think Bogaerts is going to go. Bogaerts is going to probably go late first round next year. Don't you think?
No, I think he does. But that's where I'm just checking in. Corey Seager or Trevor Story.
Corey Seager for me. I'm a big Seager guy. But it'd be really difficult if those are the two guys I'm choosing between because I feel completely different about their offensive environments,
mm-hmm.
you know, and their lineups.
Eli?
I think Seager's the better player, but I don't know that that's going to come out in the wash.
Yeah, that's a tough one. Seager's definitely the better player, but that's like one of the worst places in the world to hit. But he's making it work, so I guess I'll go Seager.
Trevor Story or Francisco Lindor?
How many steals does Lindor have right now?
Give me a second and I'll tell you. 13. He's 12, 13 right now with a 307 average.
I'm going Story.
I would rather have Story. I mean, I just think the story behind Story is that he always had power, and the power is going to play in Coors no matter what. The story behind Lindor is that nobody expected him to be this good offensively, and while he's still a really good offensive player, he's plateauing a little bit here in the middle of this season. So, I mean, I think I would rather have Story. By the way, Trevor Story went he went to Jeffrey Smith in the 9th round with looks like the 11th pick of the 9th round, which was a full round and a half after Lindor went.
We do need to also remind or let people know that baseball, the value on baseball was pretty depressed. Like, people went basketball and football really early.
Oh, yeah.
Trevor Story or Carlos Correa?
You don't have to ask me. I think you know where I stand on Correa. I mean, I love.
You're
love
going both. Story over Correa?
Yeah, not exactly. No, think Correa's much younger.
So you're going Correa over Story?
Yeah, okay. I think Correa should still be the first shortstop off the board after Machado next year.
Wow. Okay. I disagree with that, but I can't disagree with it vehemently, and I'm taking Correa. I'm taking all those guys that I've mentioned so far over Story.
Even if that's the case, that's the all reasonable to choose over Story. But
I mean,
that's not a knock on Story, because we got some stud fucking shortstops these days.
Yeah, we do, but that means 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. I'm counting at least 5 or 6 shortstops that we're taking over Trevor Story.
But those guys are all going to go in the first round and a half, aren't they? I think they're all going to go pretty early.
I think in a few weeks we're going to need to start talking about our first round.
Well, I just think, look at Correa is in Houston. Xander Bogaerts is in Boston. You know, Lindor's in Cleveland, and he's right in the heart of their lineup. I mean, I just think that not only are these really good players, they're in really good situations. I think they're going to be really, really attractive fantasy assets next year.
I feel like, to me, Lindor and Story are third-round picks, and the rest are second or better.
All right.
Off the top of my head.
And we'll definitely have podcasts during the off season to discuss this more. But and maybe, like I said, maybe in a few weeks, as August starts to roll on, we'll start prepping more for next year and have these kind of discussions. That's going to wrap us up, though. Eli, why don't you tell people where you can reach and what you're working on?
You can find me on Twitter at EliFWFB, and be sure to check out the Football Podcast, which is just started up, and also the DFS show on Tuesdays with me and Cam, and on Fridays with Mike and Cam.
And Chuck, where can you be reached, and what are you working on?
I can be reached at Just Chucking It on Twitter. I have a lot of good Twitter discussions with people, and I enjoy it. What I'm really working on now is I want to delve strongly enough into football and basketball that I can get to be a proficient sub on any podcast that you guys might need during those seasons. So that's kind of what I'm delving into after I got done with my mid-season draft stuff. So,
and I can be reached on Twitter at Justin Mason FWFB. You can read all my football stuff on friendsoffantasybenefits.com. My baseball stuff is mostly going on FanGraphs right now. I am trying to not delve into basketball because I don't find it interesting enough to delve into.
Yes, we know your thoughts on basketball, all right?
But I did rejoin the three-sport league, and according to Eli, I'm absolutely crushing the basketball portion.
I didn't say you were crushing it. I just said I'm impressed.
Crushing it, motherfucker.
All right. I'm sure you'll find a way to screw it up.
I know I will.
Justin, what college basketball team do you follow, being a displaced Californian?
I guarantee he's going to say none.
That is not true.
Oh.
I follow the Georgetown Hoyas.
That's what everyone would suspect, yeah, the San Francisco Giants and the Georgetown Hoyas.
Well, I grew up in Washington, D.C. I literally lived across the street from Georgetown, the campus in Georgetown, when Allen Iverson was going there. Oh. And I used to go get mid-season tickets mid-season game tickets and for really, really cheap, pretty much sit where you want on a Tuesday night and get to watch Allen Iverson play against college competition. It was the most amazing display of athleticism I've ever seen.
Yeah, they had some studs, and as if I needed another reason, which I always feel like I'm on the brink of you throwing me off the podcast mm-hmm. and the website, I am a lifetime Syracuse Orangemen fan. So there we go.
That's okay. I don't have anything. I don't have anything against Syracuse.
Okay.
Well, hold on a second. It's the Syracuse Orange. All right, they're not the Orangemen anymore. Get your facts straight.
Oh yeah, we need to be politically correct these days, don't we? I went to Marquette where it was the Warriors too. That was before what they are now.
Well, that is going to wrap us up. For Chuck, Eli, and myself, thank you for listening. Have a fantastic baseball season.